You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Gene
Johnson.
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com. And streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show.
That is the Psycho theme. Some of you have requested that we start playing it before the shows, and we really can't disagree with you. Bing is for doing, and we are doing the AfterBuzz Bates Motel show. I'm Joe Sanfilippo. I'm joined by the indomitable Dua Casey.
Hi, everybody. Welcome.
And the incomparable Nandoval.
If I knew what that meant, I would maybe get offended, but I love it. It's awesome.
People can't even compare to you. That's how good you are.
I'll accept that.
No, okay. No, you're welcome.
It's acceptable. Okay.
Thank you is the appropriate response.
Thank you, Mr. Sanfilippo. Thank you.
And I'm Joe Sanfilippo. Nice to be with you guys tonight.
Nice.
We are missing Mr. Joseph Braswell, which is very sad. He is actually hanging out with Oprah. So whilst we are missing him, it is because he's doing something cooler, and we just have to accept that.
That bastard.
Dua had some fun stuff to talk about, though, about the theme. We have a little trivia for everybody.
I did. Well, Hitchcock insisted for the score of Psycho, which, of course, is a famous score. Hitchcock insisted that...
You mean people associate the score in some way with certain things?
Yeah.
Can we hear it again? Can we bring it up again just for fun?
Yeah.
No, maybe not. Maybe it's already
Marissa's about. Like, no.
I mean, you just can't help it. You just see a knife.
It gets really... Well, Hitchcock insisted that Bernard Herrmann write the score for Psycho in spite of the composer's refusal to accept a reduced fee for the film's lower budget. So what Herrmann did, he used the lower budget and he used just a string orchestra rather than a full symphony. And then Hitchcock actually went on to remark later that 33% of the effect of Psycho was due to the music.
So wait a second. So he went with that string thing because...
Of the budget.
Because of the budget cut. Because he wouldn't take a reduced fee.
Exactly.
So screw you, you're paying me.
Yes, but I will... But it worked.
But no trumpets, no horns, just string.
Exactly. And I think it worked really well.
So you're saying downsizing has its advantages. That's what you're saying?
There's that. I remember in college, you used to talk about that. Like, sometimes art's boundaries are what makes sometimes amazing art happen.
Agreed. I agree 100%.
Speaking of art, I'm not really sure where I was going to go with that. We could talk about taxidermy a little bit. The Art of Taxidermy, a book we were introduced to today. What's the name of the book? It's not The Art of Taxidermy. It's
Robert Kennedy's Master Course in Taxidermy.
Master Course in Taxidermy.
And I think that was the book, and I would love for you guys to comment, but I'm pretty sure that that was the book that was in Psycho, that Norman Bates was reading that book.
Certainly looked old enough to be in the original movie.
Yeah.
A little on the older tip. This was a great episode. Well, they're always great episodes. This is such a great show.
Don't we have a special treat today?
I believe we have a special guest today. We have Keegan Connor Tracy, who will be joining us. She plays Miss Watson. She'll be joining us. Is she on the phone now? Keegan, are you there? Hello?
Miss Watson, I presume?
Apparently, you have to call
I'm sure
back
not the first one who said
we,
that.
We
too.
May have her, we may not. I can't hear her. Can you hear her?
We'll try her again.
All right, okay. We're going to try her again. We will be having Keegan Connor Tracy, who plays Miss Watson, who you may remember from this episode, from a Boy and His Dog, has a nice altercation with Norman on the porch at the school there when he tries to run off and she wants to
And
ask
a nice
him.
Altercation earlier in the season with heart palpitations and a blackout.
Yeah.
Yep.
That looked deep,
man. That was
man.
Pretty early in the season,
That was some of the stuff we weren't sure if it was real, not real.
Exactly.
It turns out, by the way, all of our stuff that we weren't sure if it was real or not
really
real.
It's really real.
It's all real.
It's all real. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
They show that one scene where he's imagining his mom, and next thing you know, we're going crazy. Think, oh, that's not real. That's not real. And everything's real. I raised my hand. I predicted all of that being not real.
Right. I think we had a whole show about not real.
Not
and
real.
It was all real.
I think that show wasn't real. The show that we did.
The show was fake.
The other show was fake.
We're going in circles.
Yes.
A lot of stuff happened this episode. We really get to see Norman start in on his taxidermy, down his taxidermy road, which for those of us with weak stomachs, a little bit unpleasant.
That was weird.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a lot.
And we definitely learned that when you do taxidermy, you do it to the blues.
Okay. Based on that audio, I'm just guessing, do we have her? No. Okay.
He definitely said something interesting to Will, who's Emma's father, about how it seems like such a shame to bury her, to let her go, talking about the dog.
Right, just put her in the ground seemed wrong.
It just shows how he has this problem disconnecting and he can't let anything go. And Braswell said last week he had a prediction that Norman is going to start talking to this dog, and I think he might start doing it. Because at the end of the episode, he was sitting there just looking at the dog, and I think that he really might start.
Well, he was petting the dog under the chin. He was scratching. That was creepy as all get out. Yep. I'm not a big taxidermy guy. I think it's a little on the creepy tip, personally.
Well, so did Norma. Norma thought that too.
Well,
so
yeah, and I like that. That scene was great. I'm not saying you're a freak. I'm not saying you're a freak. Just people who do what you do and look like you and act like you are freaks.
Are freaks.
Yeah. Not you.
You could be the exception. You missed Yul Brynner look-alike,
right?
Yeah.
Did you end up finding the song that they were playing in the beginning?
Oh yeah,
I thought that was really cool.
I thought it was really cool actually too that they were playing a blues song.
Wait a minute, what song was this? What are you guys?
This was at the top of the scene, at the top of the show when they were doing the taxidermy scene with the father. And they were playing, I think it was Blind and Deaf Man Blues.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was very, like, funky.
Yeah. And, the Blind and Dumb Man Blues by the Smokey Smothers.
That's
Smokey
what
Smothers.
You were talking about when you're like, let's play that blues song.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out.
Yeah.
What I love about that is that, obviously for Emma's dad, this is a thing. Like, he goes in his shop, he turns on his music, he gets to go into his own world. And it was clearly worth, I don't know if his marriage with his ex-wife was doomed or not, but, as soon as she was out, the dead stuff started coming back in, so... That seemed to be the deal.
Well, I guess, all those animals are kind of blind and deaf. So,
yes.
Maybe there is a funny little pun there with the title of the song.
How do you say it? They're already dead. We can't hurt them.
Yeah. It's not, we're not hurting anybody.
Well, we got some stuff.
What could go wrong with that?
Right?
Yeah.
We got some stuff this show that kind of confirms some things. I mean, the girls started talking shit about Norman in the bathroom. Emma comes out. She straightens him out. Rough.
I love that. I love that she could have stayed in the bathroom, not said anything, cowered. She got out of there, defended him. And I just think that shows her character. And it's, I really loved it.
And the type of gal she is, she comes, you're my friend. I'm not going to let them just go trash you because they think they can.
There's a little throwaway there that I was wondering about. She ran in there like she was going to throw up.
Like she was having an attack.
And then it was an attack. Yeah, she seemed like she was going to throw up, and then she had the inhaler.
Mm-hmm.
So I know we already know she's sick, but for a second, it just reminded me of like a morning sickness type of thing. I don't know why I was thinking that, but I know, as far as I know, she doesn't.
I don't think there's any chaka-chaka going on there.
Yeah, I don't think there's any with her or anybody. But I thought it was an interesting way to get her in that bathroom.
When I was in when I went to EMT school, which was an interesting thing. It turns out I'm not good at that job. I don't want any part of it because when things are broken, I'm not going to try and fix them. But one of the things they said is that women have a tendency to run to the bathroom when something's happening to them out of embarrassment, and they find that a lot of women almost choke to death or do choke to death in restaurant bathrooms. And in bathrooms in schools because they're embarrassed that something's happening, and they'll run so that no one sees them choke.
Huh. And almost like the way the cats do when they cough up a hairball.
I have no experience with cats, but I believe that it happens. but it's an interesting phenomenon that I thought was that what the instructor was talking about. Like that they'll literally a woman will run to the bathroom in a restaurant choking on something and die because no one follows her in, and rather than be embarrassed in front of people and say they're choking. I think that was what Emma was doing, just kind of getting in there and didn't want anybody to see how weak she was at that moment out of maybe fear.
Well, then she definitely showed some strength afterwards when she heard.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think it was also to remind us that she's sick. Like, because if something's going to happen to her in future episodes, they have to periodically remind us that, like, this is what happens when she's sick. Like, she's going to have an episode. She's not just walking around with an oxygen tank. Like, this is degenerative.
Yeah, this is not a permanent thing. This is a slide down.
Exactly.
Hmm.
We also get Mr. Abernathy, who we'll get to in a bit. We get to learn a little bit more about him. He's not such a nice boy.
He reminded me of the Smoking Man. I know that I said X-Files last week, but he reminded me of the Smoking Man in X-Files when he was outside with that cigarette just looking up at Norma's window. Just very.
Yeah, that was creepy as all get out, wasn't it?
Right? Yeah, when she was dusting all of the pictures.
Hmm.
That was crazy. So,
Do we have Keegan? Not yet. We're trying again.
Not yet. Still trying.
All right. Well, then let's
hop into Norma.
Let's do it. Let's talk about Norma. I think there's a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. So I'm actually really excited to talk about Norma this week. I feel like this was a pivotal episode for Norma. She seemed totally powerless the entire episode, which was very, very weird for her. It started with the scene with Abernathy in the hotel room, where she was going to clean the hotel room. Is she just curious about him, scared about him? It's like she wants to find out what's there. So she goes to the hotel room, and there's that whole scene where she is completely and totally powerless and ends up leaving scared. Then there's the meeting with Sheriff Romero, mm-hmm. where she goes in hopes that he will, you know, help her out, trying to get a seat on the board. And not only does he not help her out, he threatens to burn her to the ground if she ever threatens him. She also, and so she leaves that scene completely and totally deflated. Immediately, she gets a phone call from the school, and then she has the high school faculty at White Pine Bay talking to her about her son. And that's another scene. She tried to get her control back by switching the conversation around, by wanting to pick the therapist. But you know, I just feel like this scene, it was all wrapped up at the end of the episode when the therapist in 1 hour totally pegged her, had her number, knew exactly what was going on. And he said that sometimes we try and control things in our life when everything else is out of control.
Right.
That perfectly described her this episode.
It was.
And she got pissed.
She sure did. And it scared the crap out of her. And she wouldn't even admit to a professional. He goes, "Do you ever feel out of control?" And she was like, "No. No, like
I'm
that
in complete
was,
control."
That was, yeah, but that was her time. Like, that was her opportunity to just break down and be like, "No, my life is not going the way I want it to." But instead, she had to save face. She would not admit that she is not in control.
I think that this whole episode is a lot of these characters was about reality kind of setting in. Like, your place in the herd is now being shown to you. Do you know what I mean? Like, your mm-hmm. place in the pecking order.
Yeah.
Like, when Sheriff Romero said, "You and I are not on the same playing field. Don't
yep.
presume to come in here and do that again.
Mm-hmm.
You don't play on my level. You don't know who I am. You're brand new here.
I will burn you down to the ground." Do you know what I thought of when he said that? I thought of Bradley's dad, who got burned,
yeah. or the other guy that got, or the guy that got hung up between the yard arms there.
Exactly.
What did I call him? Old Dylan, but that is not his name. Remo. I call him Dylan of the future. Remo was saying, "Yeah, you don't quit this job; you get fired."
Exactly.
You don't get fired. You know, I mean, but fired. You know, burn you to the ground. This is a deal. You will be lit up if you mess up in this town. That's the deal. And I think that for Norma, like you said, but all those doors are closing that she in her mind saw as open, but they were never open.
No. Yeah, it's just how she perceived them to be.
Yeah, she believed that she could make this stuff happen through charm and through just will, but it's not going her way. I mean, it's pretty clear this is not the place for her.
Well, and she also invites it in as well. Like, her following Abernathy at the end.
Stupid.
But this is
yell
why.
At the screen in a horror movie, stupid.
She should not be doing capers.
She's not caper qualified.
She's not caper qualified.
No question.
Kids do capers.
But not Norma.
Not Norma.
She's at least not alone.
Yes.
Yeah, she obviously she's scared of him. She follows him anyway. And that scene seemed very much like The Usual Suspects. It's like they're painting this guy, Jake Abernathy, into like a Kaiser Soze kind of character.
Which it turns out he might be.
Yeah. Exactly. You don't know. But they're definitely leading us to believe that, because he is, and he's one of those guys that doesn't get mad. Like, he, you could tell that he was really upset, but he, in his not being overly angry, he's actually a lot more scary.
Well, you know, it's one of those things that happens, I think, when you go into business for yourself. I think there's a psychology to it. You start to think you're kind of, you know, that you're a big shot, but you're taking on a lot more responsibility than a quote-unquote employee for the first time. And you're doing something on a grander scale, and you have a place. So, I mean, this is the first time she's had her own business. She has an actual landmark, so to speak. I mean, this is the big hotel. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a motel, whatever you want to call it. So she feels that she's entitled to this position all of a sudden. And the town is really letting her know in this episode that is not the deal.
Yep.
I'm the sheriff. I don't work for you. I work for me, and I deal with much more important people than you. I'm not on your playing field. And she underestimates Abernathy huge.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to follow this guy? What are you, crazy?
But then it even goes down to the principal and the teacher over her son.
Absolutely.
It goes all the way down.
Even with Emma's father.
Yeah.
When she sits down with Emma's father, she goes, I don't want you to do this. And he's like, we're not hurting anybody. These animals are already dead. What could possibly be wrong with this?
Right. Doesn't that sound like
ironic.
The ultimate irony line. Yeah. I wrote it down. It was a young person following his passion. What could go wrong with that?
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now, why do you think that Sheriff Romero actually reacted the way that he did? Because her grievance was that they're going to create this bypass that's going to essentially cut off the motel. Now, for some reason, I think that Romero really wants this bypass
there.
Well,
let's examine the small town in a brief sort of way, shall we?
Sure.
So we have various competing interests that are existing in this town. There are people that want the bypass. Otherwise, the bypass would not be happening.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is going to a planning commission somewhere and saying, we want state money for this bypass. Mm-hmm. Well, what's the purpose of the bypass? Well, it'll bring business and yada, yada, yada. There is a committee that is put up. This is the planning committee she sees the seat open on, right?
Yep.
That's the local committee. That committee moves it up the ladder to the county commission, and then that goes up further up the line, planning commissions, and then eventually that money comes down from the state or through a federal grant, and they build that road.
Mm-hmm.
So there is someone who in town needs that road to be built for their business. I would imagine that is not a up-and-up business. I would imagine they're moving some product that they shouldn't be moving. Who gives a shit? Whatever the reason is, that person is bigger than Norma, and that is what the sheriff, I think, was telling her.
Mm-hmm.
Like really laying it down, like, hey, you ain't shit. And don't think that you and I are friends because I pulled you out of the fire once. That was as much for me as it was for you, but don't remind me of that ever again.
Well, this all goes back to the town. We haven't really seen the town spotlighted in a while. As far as the fact that everyone's rich, but it's, you know,
right?
the most logical resource for that town has dried up. Because it was a small town, I believe. What was it? There was lumber. I can't remember what it was, but they were saying how their regular resources have dried up.
Right.
I don't remember what it was. I remember them cutting the lumber at that festival, but I don't remember what
it was. I think it was a logging town.
I think it was a logging town, but they were even admitting that look at all these people driving expensive cars. They're not doing that from this resource.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show that the town's finally starting to fight. It's almost like the town's fighting back. Now the town's taking center stage again here.
What?
Between last week when Norma went in to try and put the pamphlets in the restaurant and all the interactions she's having with townspeople and just everyone in the area, the town is fighting back.
It's like she's swimming upstream. She's having a really difficult time.
No, it's a rough scene, and there is nothing quite like the moment when you get really shown who you are in a bigger picture,
and that's
I think that for a lot of this episode was Norma's deal. Like, you are getting shown over and over again that you just can't push your way through this stuff.
And props to not just Vera Farmiga, but every single person pretty much that she had a scene with this episode, because I think it was like spot on. Jerry Burns was great as Abernathy.
Yep.
Nestor Carbonell,
so
Romero, everyone, all the way down to just people who, like the psychiatrist whose first episode, you know,
right,
we've seen him. But and I guess that's a testament to her and also just the people she's with. But like, there's acting classes right there,
right,
especially with Norma, because some of those scenes she comes in with an ego and she comes in thinking she's on top, and just to see the status change, the swerve.
And her reactions are amazing.
Oh, when he says, have you considered coming to therapy by yourself? And, or when just, I think the therapist just asked her to hang out for a moment by herself.
Yeah.
And just the way her head goes back. Excuse me? What?
Yeah.
Just so taken aback.
And yeah. I loved the scene with Abernathy in the hotel, because it was like this dance, like the way it was blocked and everything. When she was, first of all, she didn't want him to be there. So now she's automatically, the control has shifted, because now she's in the room, cleaning the room and making the bed.
She's mating.
That's right.
She's not acting as the manager, not acting as the owner. She's acting as the maid. That is her function. So she's immediately demeaned.
She's sneaking around, trying to be a little sneaky with her agenda there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then immediately he starts asking these questions that he obviously already knows the answer to. We find out later in the show. And then the very, 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 very end, when she wants to take that cart out.
And he grabs it
and he just grabs the towels, and then all of a sudden she's like almost like a fawn walking away with her, like,
even before that when he stands up and she's still kneeling by the lamp.
Yep.
Even that whole status change right there, and it was so menacing in so many ways, because they were just talking about Keith Summers and here he is in such a dominant position over her.
Yeah.
So
the,
much status in this episode, you're 100%
broke.
Right.
Yeah.
So much status. And status, you know, a lot of the time we kind of get away from that. We don't really think about it, but so many status changes. And you're 100% right. Norma drops status with just about everybody in this whole episode.
Yep.
And a lot of it is not because she wanted to, not because she recognized the need to. She was forced to.
Yeah.
And but, that's a big deal. That's a big difference.
But luckily, it ended up being Dylan at the end of the episode that was her saving grace.
Yeah.
That, you know, she's had this terrible day. She finally, you know, kicks out Abernathy after the scene with the therapist where she's like, I'm totally in control. I'll show you right now I'm in control. I'm going to go and I'm going to kick out Abernathy and I'm going to make him leave. You know, she handled it, as she said. And then Dylan comes up and he's like, how many rooms do we have? I'm going to fill up your hotel for a couple of weeks with these. Like, he really saved her. She was so excited.
Again, she has no idea. And it, wait until she finds out that it's the pot trimmers that are they're hanging out in the hotel. That's not going to go well either. It's the weed trimmers.
There's nobody there that's got a legitimate business. Nobody there.
You're not driving a Cadillac off an antique shop. I don't care how good your antiquing is.
By the way, I think it's hilarious that Norma's like, I will not have any illegal activity going on in here.
Well, you ain't going to have nothing happening.
Exactly.
You're going to be empty. Mm. The status change, I think, is such a good thing you brought up. Is it Nando?
You guys
both brought it up. So well done. Because, you know, over and over again, you know, the status, this whole episode, she's just knocked down. Mm-hmm. And Romero, he blew my mind. Like, there was a deadliness to him. There was a, listen, don't ever do that again. And don't, you and I, and just the way he said it to her, we don't play on the same field. It was not an intro to a conversation. It was not an opening gambit. He shot her down.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And don't ever do this again. And we are not this. We're not social. We're not friendly. We're not friends. Yeah. Get out of my office.
Well, even that scene when she called in the beginning, when she called the receptionist or the police,
right.
And she had to spell Bates.
Yeah.
B-A-T.
Yeah, she had to totally spell Bates. Even that phone call. Here she is calling like their old friends, and now she's got to be like, she's got to spell her name.
No. Who are you again?
Yeah, exactly.
You ain't nothing, lady.
I loved Romero's reaction when she made the proposal that she did, and he just doesn't, his expression doesn't change at all. And he's just, well, now why would I do that?
Why would I do that?
Like, what? this is why you're here?
Are you trying to say you have something? I mean, it was a great scene. But Abernathy, 100% right. When he's standing there in front of him and she's kneeling down, I mean, literally, the status is gone.
Yeah.
And he grabbed that cart. He took control of that. That was violent.
That was a violent
straight up move. A violent move.
Absolutely.
And it was a warning shot that Emma was too stupid to, I'm not Emma, I'm sorry, Norma was too stupid to see.
Yeah.
That's your warning.
Yeah.
And then she follows him. My goodness. Like she's Nancy Drew. She Nancy Drews it over to the harbor, and that did not work out well at all.
Well, it's her need to have control, and now that she doesn't have it, she's going to chase after it. Even, I mean, Norma, number one, like she finds herself in these crazy situations. You know, she doesn't have the best taste in men. She always gets herself in these crazy pickles, and it's because she literally follows it. She chases after it, and that's why things happen for her the way that they do.
All right, let's do this here. What is Abernathy after? What is he looking for? Is it the book?
I thought about that, but I wouldn't think so because the book was in room four. He's in room nine.
He's
in room nine, and I would think that he would have looked in room four. And then for a quick second, I thought it was the belt, and I was like, no, well, that's silly that he doesn't know anything.
He didn't even know about the belt.
Yeah. It's something of Keith's, because that was Keith's boat, right?
That was the boat.
That was Keith's boat that he went on to. I don't know, Nando. Do you have anything?
I mean, the only thing I could think of, I mean, obviously the book is the thing that comes to mind, but it was in a different room, so it couldn't have been that. The only other thing I could think of is somebody else has whatever it is he's looking for, which means that it doesn't end in the town with Shelby.
I honestly think that it's something that we don't know about yet.
You think it's a mystery?
I do. I do like the way that Abernathy said, Keith Summers was the bottom rung, I'm on the top rung.
Yeah.
Almost insinuating that he is this boss that
Remo was talking
about
as well.
That Remo was talking about.
So he's the big boss?
I don't think he is. I actually think, I'll save who I think the boss is for predictions.
You think he's the sheriff?
Well, I said I was going to say I do.
Look how mad you sound right now. Oh, that's awesome.
I think it's the sheriff, and I think it's the sheriff, yeah.
All right, you think it's Romero?
I do. I think Romero's the big boss.
Might be. But yeah. Abernathy, how do you put it? He's way up the ladder. Keith's at the bottom rung, I'm at the top.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like Keith didn't know. And then I don't understand. What concerns me is why he thinks that Norma knows this. Like this was obviously something. And how did he know that Norma was sleeping with Shelby?
And if he was, and if Norma was sleeping with Shelby, is his reasoning, then you ought to know what this thing is. How could you not know?
Well, the restaurant owner last week knew too.
Oh, all right. Well, okay.
So just, you know, the small town where it gets out.
All right.
It does get out.
All right.
It does get out. Nando Val, let's get into Norman a little bit here. Let's talk about Norman and Emma.
Well, you know, this is just like we're finally realizing that everything we thought was fake was real. I think starting off, we realize finally, okay, Norman is not the chick magnet that we all were wondering what the hell's going on
here. Yeah, bizarro world. What are we living in?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that scene in the bathroom was the first time we actually got to hear anybody talking badly.
Can I tell you that was actually comforting to me in a way?
It was one of your predictions.
Well, yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do.
Okay.
But that scene was comforting to me. Not just because my prediction was right, but because social universe is still the same. Like, I was like, God, what the hell's going on? Is it completely different?
Oh, wait. I think we have her online.
Is this Keegan?
It's Keegan.
Hi, how are you?
We've made it work. Keegan,
yes,
Connor, Tracy, you guys. Keegan, I'm Joe. This is you're here with Nando Val and Dua Casey.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
Hi, Keegan.
So
I
you
thought got stood up.
What's that?
I said I thought I got stood up.
We would never not. Be that rude.
No, not
absolutely not. So Keegan plays Miss Watson on Bates Motel. And you were actually in this episode. Have you seen the full episode?
I have, yeah.
And what did you think? What were your thoughts on the episode?
How did you think you did? I think you did okay.
Well, thank you for that.
Nice.
Rousing compliment.
He's the sarcastic one.
He's got away with the ladies.
Yeah, really, I can tell. How long have you been single?
Oh, no.
Oh.
Ouch.
There it is.
She said she'd come back.
She's quick-witted.
I thought it was good. I thought it was interesting for me to watch because I hadn't, you know, I don't always get a chance to see things. So it was nice to see. And I'm really curious what people will think of where it goes from here, you know, with her. She's clearly keeps getting sort of closer and closer to Norman, and obviously that puts her against Norma.
Well, this
she's
is what
pretty
I,
invested, you know.
This is what I found really interesting is that when in this episode, when you when Miss Watson witnesses the the exchange between Bradley and Norman, she's so drawn to it. I don't think that normally a teacher would probably just, you know, kind of get on with class, but you do seem to have this this weird connection with him. It was also in, I believe, episode one as well, when you sat down with him and you were just talking to him. There is this connection that you guys have.
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, it's always, I talk about it a lot in interviews this year, there's a line up against which she sort of constantly butts, you know, and I don't know, it's hard to tell, I think, sometimes whether or not it's just an innocent teacher who's looking at a kid that she thinks may be troubled or, you know, needs some extra attention, and a teacher whose attentions go too far. Mm-hmm. Like, I found myself asking that a lot when I was playing it, thinking, if this was a man, what would they think? You know what I mean? And there's a very fine line there between this sort of caring female figure and somebody who's being lascivious.
Well, it adds to all the other girls that, at least in the beginning of this season, it just seemed weird how Norman was getting along with all the females outside of the house. And the attraction, and of course your scene in particular was such a big one because you got the heart beating really, really fast, the palpitations, and then he blacked out of there. So,
oh, right, from the one where he was imagining
the bondage fantasy.
The whole bondage thing,
exactly.
Yes. And that's something that I think you normally think about your teacher.
Well, I mean, you do it your way, I'll do it mine. But
well, or your mother, for that matter, if you were watching closely enough.
Well, yeah. And we definitely have seen some of that in this season in Bates Motel as well between Norman and his mom. So
yes,
it seems to be an extension of that.
So does it go that way? Well, I don't know what you can tell us or not. But are we going to go? Are we going to go down that road and see some confrontations between Miss Watson and Norma, aside from the one we just saw today?
I can't tell you that kind of stuff.
It's all right. Nobody's listening.
No one listens to the show.
We barely listen.
I think everybody who's been watching the show will be really happy and interested and amazed by what happens in the last couple of episodes. Well, you know, they really have tried to give you something that will have you flying by the seat of your pants, I think, you know?
What kind of research do you have to do for something like this? Because do you really have to pay attention a lot to Psycho, to the book and the movie? How fascinated were you with the detail that they tried to keep with this homage?
Well, you know, I think that they have been saying all the way along that it's really a sort of modern retelling. It has no necessarily any faithfulness to the original. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think it's been surprising at every turn. That's how I have felt about it.
Can I ask you a question at the beginning of the episode? That the book, the taxidermy book, was that book actually also in the movie?
That I don't know. I can't tell you. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's all right. That is all right. So you also, I read your bio, and I noticed that you studied business and then you switched to psychology.
Yeah.
So is there...
right about the time that calculus came about.
I had a similar experience.
Yeah, I think I did too. Calculus, yeah. that kills us all.
Yeah. And economics 101, this is not for me.
How could incurring the debt be good for the business? I don't understand.
Exactly. I'm like, this isn't even real money.
This is crazy. You people are all nuts.
So how...
It's true. And it became true, right? The whole economic crash. It's all about money that doesn't actually exist.
It's so bananas. I do think that we put out some seriously deranged business people for a lot of generations. I don't think we'll recover anytime soon, but that's a different conversation.
We're getting pretty tangential on this one.
Right?
Oh, my. So after studying business and then psychology, when did you actually start studying, or how did you get into acting?
Well, it was always what I wanted to do. I just didn't want to be, you know, like a 17-year-old. All I ever did was high school.
Mm-hmm.
I really felt like an education was important, and I traveled, and I did a lot of things. I think you have to live life to play life, so that was my philosophy.
Oh, that's a great... I like that. And, hold on just...
Let me ask you a question. Does Miss Watson know about some of the stuff going on in this town?
You know, that's a really good question, and I found myself asking the same thing, and I don't have an answer for you. I think it would be hard to not know what's going on in that town.
Since it's such a small town?
Yeah, and I think some of it is so overt. Surely she's looking around at some of these kids and thinking, how is it that your parents can afford that BMW they gave you, or, you know?
Hmm. Well, that would be my thought. And then, have you made a decision on that person? Yeah, probably personally you have. But then, does that influence the way you're playing? The way you're playing, Miss Watson?
Well, I think it spoke to why maybe she's so intent on protecting Norman. Maybe she knows about the kinds of trouble that he can get into with some of these kids and some of these people in this city. And I think she sees that coming. Maybe, you know.
Oh, it's she recognizes kind of like an innocent kid in over his head?
Maybe. You know, like, I don't think she's blind to what's going on. She seems intuitive and smart and observant.
And the character's super sensitive to Norman. And that was something we questioned in the beginning, whether or not all the stuff that was going on was necessarily real. Whether or not your interaction in that... It was the first scene?
Or whether it was just Norman's projection
right.
of what his teacher should be.
Whether your character was as into Norman's feelings as you were in that first scene together, I think, or whether or not that was something he was fantasizing.
That's an interesting perspective, certainly based on the time, you know, how many times we've seen him talking to his mother and she's not there. Anything is possible with Norman's psyche.
And also, you seem to have, you have this very classic look about you, but I feel like stylistically, they also almost like very kind of like 30s-ish or 50s. Like they seem to keep you kind of like encapsulated in this certain period.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was interesting how that came about, because I don't think that was conceptually something that they had before I came in. It was sort of something that I brought, and then Monique, who is the costume designer, who's so great and so brilliant, it just sort of kind of really organically came together, and I think it was just brilliant what she did, you know?
Yeah, we've talked quite a bit about how Norma...
And Tom, in hair, too. I can't forget Tom, because I really think that's part of it. It's this very iconic kind of hairstyle.
And they do a similar thing with Norma. I mean, the only time we've seen Norma outside of her her kind of 60s-esque, in the hotel uniform is when she went to town that one time, I think, with Zach Shelby. But for the most part...
Yes, or when she went to meet the Sheriff Romero. And, you know, if you pay attention to the wardrobe on this show, and most good shows, it's brilliant. I mean, the little low-cut shirt that they put her in, you know, it's always Norma's way. She's smart. Norma is very smart, and she's very manipulative, and she knows what she's doing with every piece of what she has on, you know?
And she's also, well, it's not just Norma, too, but Emma as well. It seems to be that you three stand out with your style very differently than the other females, at least, in the town. So,
but then I guess they're doing their job well.
I guess so. Well, it makes you wonder if there's some kind of connection between the three of you in that case, too, if you include Emma in that, too, since there seems to be something there.
Have we seen...
Emma is her crazy taxidermy dad.
Yeah. And the crazy taxidermy dad.
So you find yourself watching that going, what's with that guy?
Well, you know, he was pretty funny, and Norma's like, well, you're not a freak, not you. You know, it's just people who do what you do and look like you and act like you, but not you.
Exactly.
How far ahead for something like this? I just feel it's so... It's just so complex, and everything seems to be unraveling. When you're doing scenes like this, do they spring a lot of this stuff on you, or have they given you a lot of research at all ahead? Do you have a bit of a floor plan even when you're doing these scenes?
No, not necessarily. I think, you know, you get your script and you do what you can with what's there, and everything else you make up. I mean, for me, backstory and script analysis is a really big part of what I try to work with. So I just had to have a story for what she was and what I didn't know. I had to make up on my own so that I felt like she had a through line about why she was doing the kinds of things that she was doing.
Well, I'm very excited to see where this goes. I'm very excited to see you and Norma butting heads eventually, because I do think there's no way around that.
Any other female in Norman's life, actually any other person in Norman's life, I think that Norma really has issues with. So, yes, I think that it would be great to see those scenes between you two.
And you know,
I would say you got to watch out. Norma is above and beyond the call of duty, I would have to say.
Deeply troubled beyond the call of duty.
Deeply so, yes.
Yeah, although in this episode she did seem to be completely and totally powerless in every single one of her scenes. She was
when you think about where she's at, I mean, she's gotten herself into a tremendous amount of trouble that she really never meant to get into. If you consider her as having been relatively innocent before she got there, there was a series of really unfortunate events, and I think she's, like, you know, getting backed further and further into a corner. And, I guess we always, you know, whenever you do that with any animal, bad things can happen, so I suspect that that's got nowhere to go but up for her as a character.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we all know eventually she winds up in a rocking chair in a basement. So, I mean, eventually we know where this lands. But
how we get from there to here is
going to be the fun. Yeah, absolutely. Well, what's up next for you? Where else can we find you aside from here at the old Bates Motel?
There's always the Blue Fairy on Once Upon a Time.
That's yes, the Blue Fairy. Yes, yes.
We're happy to be here, yeah. I just wrapped Words and Pictures with Juliette Binoche and Clive Owen.
Oh, wow.
Oh, fabulous.
It was great. And Fred Skifty, who directed, like, 6 Degrees of Separation and, you know, all these other many films that, of course, I can't rhyme off. But it was just a great experience to be on. And I'm moving on to a movie. I'm playing the mother of a teenager for the first time. I felt like I got booted off a little bit of a cliff on that one, but that's where I'm going.
it's there's a moment, isn't it? We see her for the mother of the
now you're a woman. Wow.
You said the what now? The mother of the teenage. I don't know. You must have misunderstood while you're reading the script.
That reminds me of that.
I did. I thought they said she was 2.
Right.
Backstory, she's adopted. She's totally adopted.
Yeah.
You adopted her when you were 12. It's perfect.
Reminds me of that scene in First Wives Club with Goldie Hawn's character. She's talking about...
Oh, remember that?
Yeah, she's like, yeah, we want you... No, Monique's mother? What?
Oh,
yeah.
I remember that. That was brilliant.
Oh, yes. The cliff comes for us all.
It does. It does. Well, Keegan, we look so forward to having you back. Will you come back and talk with us again, hopefully?
Of course I will. I'd be happy to. Thanks for having me.
Oh, awesome. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much.
We'll phone it up anyway.
Keep watching. Let me know what you think. I think you're going to like the ride.
Well, we look forward to seeing what you guys come up with. Keegan, Connor, Tracy, you guys. Let's hear it for her.
Woo.
Thanks.
That was our fake in studio audience. They love you.
I love you back.
Oh, and what's your Twitter, by the way, Keegan?
At Keegalicious.
Ooh.
At Keegalicious.
How do you spell that?
Yeah. KEEGOLICIOUS.
I'm going to misspell that, and I'm going to get some weird emails about exercises that I'm supposed to be doing.
Along with my...
Yeah, do it.
I'm taking a little Twitter holiday, but you can, you know, I'll be back. It won't be long. I can't stay away.
Okay. Good to know.
Well, thank you, Keegan. Well, hopefully we'll chat again soon.
Okay, thanks a lot. Take care. Have a good night.
Take care.
You too.
Thanks.
Ciao.
Keegan Connor Tracy, you guys, plays Miss Watson. That was so nice of her to call in.
She's funny.
Yeah, she is.
She
chopped me up right away.
Yeah, she's
that was
not
my
putting
favorite
up with any of your crap.
That was my favorite part, really.
I'm taking the shit off of you, Joe.
Who is this
Joe,
guy?
How's, what's it like to lose status right there?
In
the beginning of that scene there.
I mean, she was standing over me. Yep. She took my card away.
Yep. You almost broke a lamp.
It was neat what she said though about Norma and a confrontation guy. I think that's true though. Any woman that does get between Norma and Norman, you are in the line of fire. You're in trouble.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Mm. Well, let's talk some more about Norman and Emma.
Yeah,
I do think we haven't touched on that quite a bit.
Well, yeah, let's quickly go for that because I know we got
to wrap it quick.
But yeah, I mean, what I was saying before about the girls, finally we got to hear people talking about Norman, and we get to see Norman the way we actually see him. We see the town thinks a little bit of him odd. You know, he was referred to as emotionally awkward,
unstable.
What did Miss Watson say about him?
Yeah. Oh, well, could I ask
emotionally
her?
Unstable, I think.
Was it emotionally unstable? I thought it was a slightly different word.
Emotionally unusual.
That's it. Emotionally unusual. I thought it was slightly different. So we're finally seeing the town react to Norman the way we expected the town to react to Norman.
Like I said, it makes me in a way happy because the universe is not upside down and everything's okay.
Yeah. And
we don't have to have all of our weird conspiracies of what is and what isn't.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, of course, Bradley, too. I mean, now we know without a doubt that they had sex. Because
she definitely had the sex.
She pretty much admitted that in that conversation before he ran out all upset.
And not for anything. Way to go, Norman. Way to go. Moving on.
And his mannerisms were even really odd. Okay, good. His mannerisms were really odd. When Miss Watson grabbed him, his little brush back was really awkward.
Yeah, it wasn't fluid. It was just jerky and weird.
Jerky, yeah.
Because he's not used to reacting like that. I think that it just like comes out in these pops because he's so... He keeps everything in and he doesn't react and he smiles. And even when Emma was telling him, you know, I defended you because people were talking about you, and he goes, oh, and then he smiles because he doesn't know how to react the way that people are supposed to react.
Well, you know, I kind of get the vibe that he's got his reactions are happening, but he's stepping on them because he feels or he knows on some level that they are not okay. Like his reaction to what Bradley was saying to him was, I would imagine, pretty deep and pretty violent, but he wouldn't allow it to come out. And when he said he had to leave, I think it was very similar to Emma having to go in the bathroom so people didn't see her coughing and choking. He has to leave so that no one can see his reaction. Whatever it's going to be, he's not going to be in front of people. And so when Miss Watson grabbed him, I think that forced that out a little bit because he was trying to get away so he could pop off in the woods or pop off at the house, wherever.
Now, does he...
That was my thought.
He doesn't know he blacks out, right?
I don't think he knows.
I don't think he realizes it.
Okay, so it's...
Now, we established that last week, right? We all agree that he does not know.
He doesn't know. Okay. No. So I'm wondering why he like finds the need to stifle himself or run away if he's getting out of control, if he doesn't know that he goes to these places that are just abnormal.
Well, I still think he gets angry, though. I mean, I think he knows about the anger. I just don't think he knows where it goes after that.
Yeah.
What do you think? Is it a matter of degrees?
I think he acts a certain way around his mom, and he knows he can act that way around her, but around everybody else, he needs to control himself. And she, the way she protects him and the way she coddles him, I think it reinforces that.
Maybe that's what's made him ill prepared for how to handle social situations.
Well, exactly. I mean, you saw her conversation with him when she said she had to bring him to a therapist now.
Yeah.
You know, there was a very, very interesting conversation as well. It seems like he knows that there's something that he does is not right, and she's trying to hide it. She's trying to protect him.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything, I think he is chaining himself a little bit with his actions. But another awkward thing was when he was having that conversation with his mom, and he said how he fits in at school. The way he had his arms like on his hips, but it was really weird and back. I thought it was a very odd, like, I fit in, and
right?
And his pants even look a little higher up, kind of like granddad saying, right. Yeah, I get what you hip kids are doing.
I fit in with the fellows at the school.
Yes, exactly.
I drove my jalopy over there. And
may you please give me a ride for my taxidermy lesson?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So we are. This is the more awkward Norman that we're seeing, and this is exactly how, you know, we see. And you know what's interesting too? We've been seeing Norman through Dylan's eyes. throughout the season. But this episode, Dylan was incredibly separate the whole time. He was on his own journey. So it's almost like, okay, we don't have Dylan to use as that ground, but the town kind of took over for that a little bit in a way.
That's exactly right.
Ooh, that's a great way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're looking at it through the town's eyes, and everybody's a little bit different.
And because we're looking at it through the town, it seems like, again, kind of like with Norma losing status throughout the episode, we're seeing Norman as the pitiful person that they expect him to be, or sad person that they expect him to see, puppy dog, you know, like a little pet, you know, all those references the girls made.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That was so vicious, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I was going to say, of course, when Emma and Norman have that scene toward the end, Emma seems to be the only person. She's again the old soul that kind of gets him and loves him. You know, she doesn't really say that. She finally admits that she likes him to him,
right,
to his face. She said, "Yeah, I kind of like you, but you're special. I feel safe around you." She's the only one who really feels safe around him.
Bad move, Emma.
Bad move, Emma. And yeah, he's special to her, and she considers him a friend.
I thought it was so sweet when she was like, "I'm kind of used to things not going my way."
God,
used to things not working out the way she'd hoped or she wanted.
Yeah,
expected.
Brutal,
yeah.
Man.
It was so sweet. It just made your heart break. And because she was like, "Look, I like you, but that's not what this is about. This is, you're my friend and I care about you and I'm going to defend you." And like, she's a true friend to him. And it's just so sad because you know that he's going to lose her as a friend eventually. And he's not going to be able to let that go.
Well, how deep is it saying you're safe? How much do you think that she may not be that safe around him?
Well, that's we all know eventually how Norman gets, and we know, you know, temporarily how he's gotten so far. So is anybody truly, I mean, are you safe with Norman? I mean, that's Norma's point of view about Dylan and Norman moving in together. Like, that's why she told Dylan, "You can't do this. Here's why."
Hmm.
You don't want this. You can't protect him because you don't know what to look for.
Yeah, I don't think that Norma would ever do anything to Emma. I really don't. I think Norman would probably stuff Emma if Emma ever died. Hmm. Does that make sense? Like, have her with the dog rather than ever do anything terrible.
No, that's very unpleasant.
That is very unpleasant.
Look at the face you just made me make.
Yeah, but
I don't think Emma's dad would like that.
I'm
one teaching
last job for you.
He might be the most understanding.
What are you doing on Tuesday?
Out of all of them, but I don't think that he would have any. You know, somebody actually wrote in and said that Norman's blackouts have a lot to do with every time he sees his mother in these situations, like with the father, and like that seems to be when he blacks out. So maybe those are his triggers. I don't know.
I don't know either. We're going to find out, though. Let me ask you a question, Nando. What did you think this is what we were just talking about a few minutes ago, when Bradley basically lays it down for Norman, the truth of their relationship, like, this thing happened, it shouldn't have happened, I have a boyfriend, all the stuff she said to him. What do you have going through your head at that moment as a guy? And this is happening in
the
hallway.
You're asking me as an experienced guy that has to deal with this?
But he's assuming that you've gone through this before.
Is
it all over my face? Is it all over my face?
Listen, I saw you crying.
I'm really sorry.
I saw you crying.
I miss
during
you,
the
by
scene.
The way.
I figured maybe.
You know who you are. I miss you. I'm never going to forget you.
Gina, would you please
call
Nando.
Call me back. Please.
Oh, dear.
I've left 247,000 messages. But, you know, what goes on in your head, I mean, in that moment? And I can't imagine the rage that must produce.
Well,
and,
you know, considering last week when we saw the initial confrontation and he turned into his mom briefly and ran out and said she wasn't a nice girl, and now here he is in daylight in a crowded school dealing with this, and he doesn't know how to deal with it. That's exactly why he ran out.
He runs away. He can't deal with the emotion.
He can't deal with it.
I thought the way that Bradley broke it to him, though, was really sweet.
It was more gentle, that was
it
for
was.
Sure.
It was. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, she's like, "I have a boyfriend. Like, just please, just forget that it happened." Like, she could have been brutal and mean, but she wasn't. She, you know.
On the other side of it is, too, that the boyfriend will probably want to beat the living crap out of Norman. So, I mean, there's that to consider.
Oh, dear.
Boyfriend looked a little bigger than Norman.
I didn't even think about that.
You know, I think that was part of...
I don't think Norman's even thinking about that himself.
I think Bradley might have been thinking about that.
Yeah.
Like, I have a boyfriend. He might kill you. Don't keep talking about this.
Little does she know.
Right?
Little does she know.
You don't know who you're playing with.
Oh, no.
Well, I want to talk about Dylan a little bit in this episode.
Sure.
Because... I think Dylan and everybody, I think this episode was so much about people kind of really getting the truth about where they are in this town. Because I think so much of this season has been about the individual drama with each character, and there's been so much of it. But I think this episode is more about big picture and, you know, changing of status, like we said earlier about Norma. Like, you are not the big fish here. Hmm. You aren't shit. Mm-hmm. And this is the deal. You're down here. And I think Dylan got a little taste of who he is in this whole deal. And you know, what did the old Dylan, what is his name?
Remo.
I have a blank spot
in my
brain.
What is Remo's deal anyway? He's like this bitter, bitter, bitter old man.
He's got 23 years working for the big boss, and he's Dylan doesn't even know who the big boss is, but all of a sudden Remo's working for Dylan. Dylan's the boss.
And because, now I'm working for you.
Right? Because Remo has no leadership quality. What is a rough thing for somebody to have said to you enough times? Like, listen, you have no leadership quality. I do expect you to come back tomorrow. We'll see you at 9.
Yeah, like, you can't quit. If you're fired, I'll probably kill you.
Right.
Like, that's what fired it means, apparently.
But I think that's so many things are happening here to let people know what this is. Like, I think up until this moment, Dylan was laboring under the delusion that you can quit this job. You can't freaking quit this job. You know where all the pot plants are. You know where all the growing is happening. You know who the growers are. You know who the seller is. You cannot quit.
Yeah.
I don't think Dylan realized what he'd gotten into. I think this episode is dropping that in his lap. You can't quit. They'll fire you maybe, but you don't want that to happen.
Well,
I got 23 years and now I'm working for you.
Exactly. Well, and you keep referring to it as Dylan from the future, but
future
maybe
Dylan.
That's exactly what he is facing right now.
That's it.
When he looks at him, he's facing a life of possibly ending up just like Remo, and perhaps eventually having some new kid who doesn't know what trimmers are.
New golden boy
that he has to answer to.
Well, now I have a question for you, gentlemen. In the car, after
yes.
they picked up the trimmers, and there was that one guy, Remo was like, this clown, we shouldn't let him in. This clown was a problem last year.
Can we refer to him as Ass Clown?
Ass Clown?
Ass Clown.
This Ass Clown, yes. This Ass Clown was in here, and Dylan was like, we're keeping him. The boss wanted him. We're going to keep him. And then when he was complaining to Remo about the food, Dylan had him pull over.
Right.
And then did he do that as almost showing a sign of respect to Remo? That he was like, look, I'm going to listen to you because you're right. This guy is causing problems. And I know even though you don't have any leadership qualities, you've been doing this for 23 years and you do know something. And I felt like it was almost like an olive branch that he was like extending to Remo.
I thought it was both. I thought it was both giving Remo the respect that, hey, you told me to look out for this guy. Turns out the guy is a monkey and we threw him out. The other thing is establishing your authority. I mean, you know, who's in charge of this bus? The hippies that are going to go pick that are going to go trim the weed?
Yeah.
Or me?
Yeah, and it'll snap everybody else back in line.
Absolutely. These people will be here for 2 weeks. I just found out I can't quit. So,
I'm stuck here. This is a lifelong job.
So but, screw you guys.
Plus, if I don't want to get into fights with this guy Remo every single night, we got to find a way that he can start respecting Dylan. And so I think that what Dylan did was he respected one of Remo's decisions and followed through with it so then he could get Remo's respect.
That played a part, I'm sure, but I felt like the way he did it was very much stronger than that. I felt it was more like to establish his authority over everybody.
Yeah.
And I bet that made that 8 hour or 9 hour car ride a lot quieter after he did that.
And a lot tenser.
Oh. Yeah, y'all. Anybody else want to take a walk? No, that's funny.
You want to mouth off to the guy with the gun and the bullet hole in his shoulder?
Well, that's the thing is what Ass Clown was doing, and by Ass Clown I'm referring to Hippie with the guitar. He was, you know, he was trying to change status. Mm-hmm. Again, so much of this episode was about status. You guys were 100% right.
Power.
And so he's saying, you know what? You guys are the drivers. I'm the important guy. Pull over, get me some food. Screw you. Get out of the car. Walk. And done. And, you know, so who's in charge now? I don't think anybody of those other hippies had a word to say.
Mm-mm.
I keep calling them the hippies. That's not fair.
Poor Ass Clown. I wonder how he got home.
I'm sure he walked. Or he hitchhiked. You know what I don't care about? Ass Clown. You know, and he was he played the co-pilot in that new Battlestar Galactica that didn't take off, Blood and Chrome. If you guys want to check it out, same actor. Didn't have time to grab his name, but he was really good in that.
I thought you said his name was Ass Clown.
I don't think that's his Christian name. I don't think so.
Some people are going to be Googling Ass Clown.
IMDb Ass Clown.
I recognize you. You're Ass Clown.
Ass Clown has like no credits. This is so weird. before we go any further, we would like to take a moment to thank all of you that are downloading us via iTunes. We very, very much appreciate it. And if you are downloading us on the iTunes, please feel free to rate us and comment. We do read all the comments, and we love them. And if you are rating us, please rate us fives, because as we've said in the past, we love fives.
Yep. San Filippo loves the fives.
We love the fives. Also, you are able at this time, now that things have gotten so interesting, exciting, and technologically advanced here at AfterBuzz, to stream us live on your iPhones, iPads, Android devices, so you can
devices.
I'm changing the way it's said. I think it's cooler that way.
Okay. Tomato, tomato.
Tomato, tomato.
That's what Nando's doing right now. He's actually watching us right now.
How do we look?
You look stunning.
I do look stunning.
You look stunning. Yes.
I'm telling you, facial reconstructive surgery.
Then it cuts. Then it cuts to me, and then the iPad breaks. So there you go.
you can do like Nando does and stream us live. Let's talk about predictions.
Ooh. And now your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
I love that drop. It always makes me so happy. Mr. Nando Velasquez, what are your predictions?
Well, I mean, we talked to her a little bit about it, but I really feel like from that first scene with her back in the pilot, that Miss Watson has a bigger role to play. And I know you so expertly tried to get it out of her.
Did you expertly. Did you hear that? That
was nice, with precision.
I'm so subtle. So what happens now? What do you mean you can't tell us? Come on.
It's very Scooby-Doo-ish.
There you go. But you're definitely going to see a lot more of her, and I do agree with the whole Norma Miss Watson battle. I think there will be one brewing. You know, I would have to say if someone was going to die, someone ought to die, I would think she would be a front runner for a death.
Miss Watson? Really?
I don't think so. Huh.
You think Miss Watson could be killed?
I think she's going to have a problem with Norma. And I think and Norman's already kind of had a little weird fantasy sequence with, you know, where he blacks out around her. So if she starts getting to be a little more closer with Norman, I think her life's going to be in danger. That's what I'm going to say.
You suspect that Miss Watson could be killed. Keegan-Connor Tracy could be killed.
Yes. By the end of the show, she could be killed, and then she'll just keep being the Blue Fairy.
And there she is, right there. There she is. She has no idea she's walking dead. She doesn't even know.
She has no idea.
All right. Do a Casey.
So,
what do you got for us?
Well, aside from the prediction that you totally blasted out for me, that I do believe that Sheriff Romero is the big boss, I think, based on what we saw of the coming this week, Abernathy gets to be quite a thorn in Norma's side. And I think that Norman is actually going to end up killing Abernathy.
Mm. Ooh.
Yeah, last Norman killing prediction was right, so you guys better watch out.
Dang.
I think that something is going to happen. Abernathy is going to get really upset. Norma's going to get backed into a corner because she can't control the situation. And Norman is going to come save the day. It's going to be another caper because, you know, she can't do capers on her own.
She's not able. She's not. What do we say? She's not caper qualified.
Not caper capable.
Not caper capable. Is Gary caper capable? I don't know. Who's Gary? Well, we know that Gary is not capable. I can't do that. It's too fast. All right. Here's my predictions for. Are you predicting?
I'm done.
You're done.
I'm predicted.
You're predictioned out.
I'm predicted.
All right. Here's my prediction. I think. Can I just do my prediction before you drops the music on me? I think that Abernathy is obviously going to drop an enormous pile of shit on Norma. I think that she has screwed up big time. I think that Abernathy is going to be connected to everyone. I think that's what we're going to learn about him, is that he is pulling the strings all over town.
I think that's a good one.
And she's going to be in a world of shit. I think that Norma will also turn on Dylan really quickly once she realizes that all the people staying in her hotel, those lovely hippies that are paying for rooms, are in fact trimming pot somewhere around. She's going to figure that out, and I think that's going to blow up.
I think she'll see the smoke coming out of the room.
She'll smell something. Is that some skunk? That's the skunky good weed.
Somebody hit a skunk?
Did someone
hit Dylan?
That weed smells soapy. I'm getting too deep into the weed. Okay. Well, Nando Velasquez, where can we find you, sir?
You can find me on Twitter at Nando Vell, N-A-N-D-O-V-E-L, and here on AfterBuzz for some other stuff. It's summertime, so it's a mix. I can't even keep track anymore.
Well said.
Hannibal with you and Joe.
Yes.
And Joe Braswell. And I think I'm going to be doing Defiance.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Jumping into that one. That's going to be cool. Yeah.
You know what? It occurs to me. We never talked about Zach Shelby. We got to see Zach Shelby one more time in Norma's bed.
He was back.
Yeah. Zach Shelby returns from the dead, taxidermied up, as it turns out.
Yeah.
That was unpleasant. Just want to mention that. Okay. Dua Casey, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Dua Casey, DuaKaissi. And that's...
Excellent.
I'm not going to give you my address or anything.
you sure?
First three numbers. First three numbers.
give us a hint. I'm Joe Sanfilippo. You can find me at Joe Filippo on the Twitters. And you can find me here at AfterBuzz for the Mad Men on Sunday nights. And also with Nando Val and Joe Braswell for Hannibal. I'm not sure when we're doing that, but we are doing that.
Yeah.
And there's another one I do, we'll isn't there? Bates Motel here. That's it. We did the other one.
That's
ones.
It right now. Yeah.
It was such a pleasure hanging out with you guys, even though we were a little all over the place today with our interview. We want to thank Keegan Connor Tracy for calling in. She was fantastic.
Keegalicious.
She was Keegalicious.
Yes.
I'm telling you, these people are going to go to the wrong Kegel. The Kegel on there's Kegel? A Kegel somewhere that people shouldn't think is her. It was such a pleasure, you guys. We will talk to you next week. Thank you, Marissa, our wonderful producer.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff. We would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.